Welcome to Comics,
episode 203. This week, we talk about Forever Evil. Visit us at welcometocomics.com. Listen to past episodes, see what we're reading next, send us a message, or find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. This episode is supported by listeners like you. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics. And now,
the cast begins.
Captain Cold is actually great in this one. He looks so pouty.
Hey, so I was in, I went to our local comic shop today, Elusive, and, but I realized, like, I have no DC stuff on my pull list at all, which is so sad because I used to be such a DC fan, and I don't know what happened.
Well, before I closed my list, the only DC books I was getting Justice League and Justice League United. I wasn't getting Green Lantern for a while because it got kind of crappy. And then I added it to my list again because they were doing like this crossover where they were introducing the new gods into the new 52.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
But then I stopped getting that. Yeah. I stopped getting comics altogether. And now, like, there's a bunch of stuff coming out, like the Star Wars you just mentioned, that makes me think, fuck, maybe I should start getting comics again.
Just subscribe to the trade. Because you know Marvel put out trades of that stuff pretty quickly.
Yeah. Well,
I'm really thinking that's what I should be doing. The other thing is now that it's with Marvel, in a couple months, that Star Wars stuff might be on MDCU.
They're usually about... MDCU is about 6 months behind. Which is not that bad, actually. Like, yeah. It doesn't...
That's about when you get the trade paperback, so...
Yeah. So... I don't know. Yeah.
I don't know. I was there, and I was like, I know there's World's Finest, but I kind of want to get... That's the thing, is there's stuff that I want to pick up, and I know I want to read, but I just want to get the trades for it, like World's Finest, which is the Huntress and Power Girl comic, and, like,
yeah.
I don't know. There's stuff that I want to read, and, like, Wonder Woman. I know the Brian Azzarello Wonder Woman's been really good, but I need to get around to picking it up and read it. I don't have the kind of want-to-read-it-now urgency that I have with some of the other stuff I'm pulling.
Well, like, one of the things that I miss getting are, like, Avengers and New Avengers. I really loved those comics. I actually really liked Justice League. Justice League United was okay. I got it. It was on my list because I was getting JLA before. Mm-hmm. And then JLA turned into Justice League. It's really funny. JLA became Justice League Canada for one issue. And then they changed it to Justice League United.
That's awesome.
Because, like, the first story takes place in Canada. And so that's why they're not Justice League of America, because like, after the whole Forever Evil storyline, the U.S. government is weary of... They don't want a superpowered team anymore. Because the JLA in New 52 was government-sanctioned. And they kind of disbanded. And so somehow there was like a Canadian emergency, but there's no Alpha Flight in the DCU. So they moved to Canada. And you know, so it ended up being like, who's on the team? So Green Arrow, Martian Manhunter, Stargirl, who's awesome. Everybody should read
Stargirl. She's great. I've loved her ever since Justice Society.
Yeah, she's really good. I think a lot of the Justice Society people should be back, but that's a story for another time.
Yeah.
And so, then they pick up there's this Canadian superhero. I don't remember what her name is. It's not English. And so I forgot. But anyways, it's like, she reminds me a lot of Snowbird from Alpha Flight in the Marvel Universe. Which
okay.
is kind of sad because it seems like DC's just stealing from Marvel a little bit. And Snowbird's not even that cool.
Aww.
Poor Snowbird.
I mean, she's kind of cool, but I don't know. She's not that exciting to me.
I honestly don't know anything about her.
Well, she, like, turns into Canadian animals, and they're always white.
Oh, but that sounds awesome.
Well, how many, I guess, what do you got? Polar bears?
She, like, turns into an owl. And, I mean, it's kind of cool because she's, like, a deity. She's, like, some kind of goddess. Anyways, that has nothing to do with Justice League Canada. And so then they also pick up Adam Strange, which is pretty cool. You know, because he's a cool character. Everyone likes him. What's funny about... I didn't realize, too, that his actual last name is Strange. It's just his name. His name is Adam Strange. But there's not really anything strange about him.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I thought it was, like, just... I don't know, his code name or something.
No, no, that is his actual last name. Oh,
dang.
And remember in Old 52, can I call it that?
Yeah, yes. I think that's what it is.
His wife was an alien, right? She was from Ran, or whatever that planet's called.
Yeah, Ran.
So in this one, she's like, he's like a college professor, and she's like his assistant, but they're in a relationship. But it's not weird, because... He's not, like, really old and she's young. You know, it's not weird. Like, you know how many movies... Yeah. Anyways, I'm rambling.
Not like a creepy professor kind of way.
Yeah, it's not creepy. But what happens is, like, they have to use the Zeta Beam for something. And so, basically, like, Alana and Adam Strange have the same, like, suit and laser gun and jetpack. But because of something with the Zeta Beam, they one of them has to be on Ran and the other one has to be on Earth. So they can't be up... And so that's, like, part of their story is they're trying to figure that out. But I stopped getting the comic before that was resolved. So. I don't know. But I thought it was kind of neat. It was a kind of a cool thing that they were doing. And so the reason they became Justice League Canada is because they moved to Canada, but then they switched to Justice League United because it wasn't just Canadians. And they weren't just...
they weren't just protecting Canada?
Right. Like, JLA was a team that was intended to protect the United States from the Justice League.
Yeah. So wait, is there the Great Ten in the New 52?
I don't know.
The world needs a Gus General and Iron.
There is.
Right, you're right, because he was in Justice League International.
Yeah.
Which lasted for about 6 issues.
They ran into him in, like, the 2nd issue or something.
Yeah, so in JLI, he's in that. And that was actually, like, an international team.
That was the one where Booster Gold was the leader.
That's right.
There we go. Except, yeah, you're right. He was on that team. I forgot about that.
And Batman, too, for some reason.
Now there's Justice League 3000, I think, which is also one I want to pick up, because that one's, like, Kevin Maguire and Keith Giffen. And
yeah, that one's, awesome. Like, in the future, obviously. And I picked up the first issue, but I felt, like, kind of meh about the first issue, so I didn't keep getting it, but it might be good. So I'm not going to say a whole series is good or bad based on the first issue. But.
Yeah, no, and you know what I think I'm going to do? I'm going to start buying just, like, the first couple issues in digital. That way I don't have it just laying around if I don't like it, you know?
Yeah, it's in my pile of comics I will need to get rid of.
Yeah, maybe we can send that to Raymond.
You know what's funny? I was digging out my Forever Evil issues, and I came across the Justice League Canada one, and I was like, we should send this to Raymond.
Dude, yes. Yes!
No, he probably has it, and that's like, it's like, hey, you're Canadian.
we can draw the Canadian, what is it, Maple Leaf on it.
It has the Maple Leaf on it already.
We can sign around the Maple Leaf, like around the border.
No, that's dumb, Andy.
Okay.
Raymond, write in and tell us who your favorite hero is or something, and we'll try to find a cool issue. It doesn't have to be Canadian. And I'm sorry, I just bashed Alpha Flight.
It doesn't have to be Canadian.
It can be whatever you want.
Yeah, it can be Puck. Okay.
I wonder if his name is Puck because it has anything to do hockey? With hockey. I mean, he's wearing all black with a P on his
I think jumper. It is because hockey.
Anyways.
And he's short. He's little. I don't know. Anyway. So you guys want to talk about this week's comic?
This week's comic.
Yeah, so this week I decided instead of reading Warren Ellis' Moon Knight, which might have been a better comic, I don't know, I haven't read it yet, I decided we were going to read Forever Evil. Because whether this is good or bad, we will discuss that in the coming however long this episode's going to be. I really enjoyed reading this comic because, you know, it's cool seeing, like, alternate universe, and it's cool seeing, like, well, it's alternate universe in that the crime syndicate comes to Earth Prime or whatever this universe is called. I think it's Earth Prime, because they're from Earth 3, and Earth 2 is the JSA world, in the new 52.
Yeah.
But when I first started reading this originally, what really hooked me into this series was that it really became a Lex Luthor comic.
Yeah, that was kind of interesting.
And I think Luthor has done really well in this comic.
He was great.
That's what hooked me, because Luthor carries this comic, because the rest of it... My big problem, and we talked about this anytime we read New 52 stuff, my big problem with New 52 is like the coyness and the retelling of things that you already know. Like, I already know the crime syndicate. I already know who they are. I already know their interpersonal stuff that happens. I already know their weaknesses, so, like, it's great that you get to see... like, organically, Lex Luthor discover, oh, Ultraman is afraid of the sunlight, and he's hunting down Kryptonite, that's great, but, like, for an experienced reader like myself, it's just like, okay, I'm slogging through these pages. Come on, catch up, buddy. But once it all gets caught up, and once the ostensibly new reader gets caught up, Lex Luthor carries that shit, and it's fun. It's fun to watch him.
And I think these takes on this on the crime syndicate are, I mean, Ultraman is the same, and so is Superwoman and Owlman. And Johnny Quick, to a degree, but I like Deathstorm, he's kind of interesting,
yeah.
And Grid, because, you know, in pre-New 52, there was no... Cyborg wasn't part of the Justice League, he wasn't one of the core members.
Yeah, in New 52, he's a founding member, so they have to find an analog for him.
And so, one knock I have against this comic, and this is something that is true for crossovers in general... much of the time, this spun out of the Trinity War event in DC, which spanned the three Justice League books, and so you don't get the part where the crime syndicate like arrives on Earth.
Yeah, the whole premise was kind of not all there for me.
Yeah, same. I was kind of like, is this actually happening in the universe, or is it alternate? And then I finally was like, oh, this is an established event that is going on, but it took me a while to figure it out.
Yeah, so I can, you know, for if anybody hasn't read
Trinity War,
I will fill in the things that happen immediately before the crime syndicate arrives. So there's this object called Pandora's Box, and it has to do with the character Pandora. And if you're a regular New 52 reader, you probably know who she is. But starting way back in September 2011, when the New 52 started, she starts appearing in the background of the comics. It's this lady in a purple hood, and for a long time, people were like, "Who is this person?" And she didn't really become relevant until Trinity War, and so she has this object called Pandora's Box, and it's just like, it's a skull, and nobody really knows what it is, and for some reason the three Justice Leagues fight over it, and it turns out that it is like it was brought over to Earth Prime by the Outsider, who is the evil Alfred.
Okay.
And then it ends up like, I don't know, maybe the animosity, I forget why, but... for some reason, the fight between the three Justice Leagues activates the box, and it opens this portal so the crime syndicate can come through.
Okay.
And so one crime syndicate member dies in the process of coming over, which is, sadly, probably the best character of the crime syndicate, and that is Sea King. And it's basically, I mean, it's Aquaman.
Yeah.
And remember when Aquaman had a hook for a hand?
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't have a hook for a hand. Instead, he has like a lobster claw for a hand.
What the fuck?
It's amazing. And it's like long-haired, goateed Aquaman, too. It's amazing. He's really good, except he like is on the page. He's like in the comic for like three panels. It's very sad. And then also, the Grid is also already... he precedes them. Oh, so let me back up. There's actually three characters that precede the crime syndicate. It's Outsider, who's Alfred. Grid, who is like a computer virus at this point, inside Cyborg's body. His cybernetic body. And then Atomica, who had been like a recent addition to the Justice League. And she's basically the Atom, except a girl version.
Yeah.
And so they're all evil, and then they, like, they manipulated the events leading up to the Trinity War to make this whole thing happen. And then they pop out and everything. And then we have Forever Evil.
Okay.
That's, like, the gist of it. Yeah. There's more to it. Like, The Question and Phantom Stranger are in it. So the Trinity War refers to Pandora.
The Trinity of Sin, right?
Yeah, Trinity of Sin. So it's Pandora, Phantom Stranger, and Outsider. Or The Question, not The Outsider. The Question.
Yeah, I figured you get into the specifics of it, and it's more or less what I figured, which is, hey, comics, everybody.
Yeah.
That's basically the premise.
And that, if any of you listeners haven't checked out that article series on Comics Alliance, it's hilarious.
Comics, but everybody.
That's true. I feel like you can apply that to almost any comic, arcade comic, just because there's so much continuity that can get very convoluted. And
well, and when you work within continuity for so long and you feel like you need to do something new, you gotta get a little crazy sometimes.
Yeah. And so, like, the whole Trinity War thing was kind of crazy, but I feel like what happened with Forever Evil was pretty cool. I think they did a good job. But, I mean, I put this on the list, so I really want to know what your guys' thoughts are on this comic, so take it away, Andy and Jen.
I'll go. I mean, I really liked this. I also think I would not have liked it if it wasn't about Lex Luthor being awesome. And I think I've said in the past in a podcast not to be named here that I really like Lex Luthor, and I have a general disdain for Superman. And it was really fun to see him shine, especially because he wasn't a hero. I mean, the comic opened with him talking about how he drowned his sister's cat.
Yeah.
He's not a good guy in this.
Well, and it opens with him trying to kill Theodore Cord, or Thomas Cord.
And
yeah, Ted's dad.
Well, he doesn't succeed, but it does happen.
Yeah.
And I will say, like, I don't know, just watching him kind of evolve and his banter with the other rogues, too, was really refreshing. Because it kind of gives you a sense of, like, where various people stand. Like, you know, Captain Cold was not having any of this BS. And
oh, Captain Cold, yeah. He's great in this.
So, like, also Catwoman. She was great in this, too. She just keeps telling Batman, like, don't antagonize them.
Batman tries, like, to give orders, and she's like, they're in charge. You should stop.
She knows what's up.
Yeah.
I will say, like, sometimes this comic was too comic-y. Like, it just, what's his name? Like, Johnny Quick? The Evil Flash was just awful.
Yeah, he's pretty terrible.
He's always been awful.
I feel like that his awfulness really makes his demise amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, even before New 52, he's always been an awful character. Like, he got his super speed from basically doing speed. Like, they superpowered a drug, and that gives him super speed.
That's terrible. Well, I mean, that's what Ultraman does. He snorts.
Yeah. That's the other thing that got me. It's like, Ultraman doesn't just consume kryptonite. It's they have to make it gritty by having him snort it like cocaine.
And then he has a nosebleed later.
Yes. Oh god, there was and then Superwoman. She and her, like, baby daddy drama.
Oh, see, Superwoman is, the baby daddy drama is kind of funny, but I also think she's, like, the worst thing in this comic, because it's just, like, I don't know.
You know, this is actually a thing I hate, because there's all these people, and they're all on Tumblr, and they all say, comics treats women so terribly, and sometimes it does, but I hate any time you get the comic that proves it right.
Yeah, and that's exactly,
like,
what this is.
This is her in this.
And you know, like,
And I mean, it's not because there's, like, somebody treating her badly. It's just that she is a terrible, terrible person. But then, right, yeah. Somebody had to write her that way.
Exactly. But, I think like, for doing study for that character, they just, like, went and watched Maury Povich for, like, a week.
Yeah, it's like she's the case study of the tropey villainous woman where she makes men do what she wants because she's so manipulative and she has tricked, like...
the lasso of submission.
Yeah, and she's also tricked, like, three different men into thinking they're the father.
Yeah.
Like, what is up with this woman?
Her lasso is like magic barbed wire.
Yes. I like the look of it. The art was good for it.
Yeah, and I like her, her costume, too, and everything, and, like, it just, it bugs me that, like, we're going to have a female villain. What's the most villainous thing a woman can do? Lie about baby daddy. Like, the most evil thing a woman can do is trick a man.
I'd like to think that that was not Geoff Johns' line of thinking when he read this comic.
I would think not. But and it's probably,
but that's the thing, is it's almost worse if that's accidental, because that just means, like, that's the ingrained go-to, is the worst thing a woman can do is trick a man. Like, why isn't she, I don't know, like, Superman, like, Ultraman could have been Superwoman, and they could have had a male Wonder Woman. I mean, they flipped the sex on the atom. I know that these are... This is the thing, is I say that, and then people are going to say, no, but Ultraman has always been Ultraman. Like, these are legacy characters from before, but you got the new 52. You have a chance to do it entirely different if you want. You could have made Ultraman black. Who gives a crap? I mean, that would have opened a whole other can of worms. I'm just saying, you could have brought in some racial diversity. It's like, probably in their favor that all the evil people were white.
True.
We don't know what race Deathstorm is.
That's true. He could be anything.
And I think Atomic is Asian.
That would make sense.
Really?
That's like Ryan Choi.
Yeah, like, so you can't really tell in here, but in Trinity War, she's clearly Asian.
Yeah, the little one is Asian, right?
Yes, Andy, exactly. The little one is Asian.
I'm just saying, you have so many opportunities to avoid all of this crap, and they don't take them. And I get legacy and all, but every once in a while, you can just ignore the legacy and just do it different, because it's New 52. That's the whole point of New 52, is you don't have to pay attention to the legacy.
It's not even the legacy. It's just the fact that her only power that we saw was to manipulate men. Like, we didn't see any actual powers from her. She didn't really fight or punch. Like, she can fly. She lassoed one person just to be like, oh, I can manipulate another man.
It was Firestorm. It was her own teammate, too.
Yeah. It's not that... To me, I mean, I know other people have, like, a much bigger issue with this, and I totally understand where that comes from. For me, I can ignore a lot of it, but I need her to make up for this deficiency in personality somewhere. Like, she needs to, like, conduct some other form of badassery. She needs to show power that's not just, like, flight plus bitchiness.
It's like, okay, one thing would have just solved it for me. If she would have been the one who was fighting Black Adam.
Yes, I could...
If she'd have been the badass who crushed his jaw, and then he had to come back and beat her, like, alright, she did something really baller to one of the worst villains in the DC Universe. She's not just a bitchy, conniving woman. Like, that's not the defining part of her character.
She didn't do shit in this comic.
No.
Like, she didn't do anything at all. She just said, like, dumb things a lot.
Most of what she did was against her own teammates. I don't know. On the whole, I really like this comic, but it's, I don't know, I'm torn. I think maybe I put it in a box and looks for things because it's New 52, but then all the things that I don't like about New 52 are there, like the typical DC casual violence, like, let's just kill people. There's a cop with a gun. We're just gonna, one panel there's a cop with a gun, the next panel there's a gun and a bunch of blood spray. Just, he died so violently, and just, like, I don't know. There's, like, a bunch of casual violence. And Otis, yeah. David, you were asking me earlier if my note, her atypical DC casual violence, was about Otis the bodyguard, or the guard.
Do you guys know who Otis is in previous DC media?
He's from the Superman movie.
Yeah, he's...
he's Lex Luthor's faithful crony guy. Yeah. Flunky's the word.
Oh, I'm glad somebody else knew.
Oh, yeah.
You know what's funny, though, too, is Geoff Johns worked with Richard Donner
Really?
Yeah. Before he became a comic book writer, he was like a film student, and he worked with Richard Donner, and then who was the director of Superman, the Christopher Reeve Superman.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so I feel like that's a nice little throwback. Too bad he got killed.
Yeah, so there's all that stuff that bugs me about this, like Superwoman's only power being that she can backstab men, and the DC typical casual violence, and like the grittiness of Ultraman having to snort like a drug. Like, okay, we get it, DC, you're dark and gritty, and that's like your angle now. But what I really liked about this comic was Bizarro.
Yeah, he was great.
He was he wasn't just great, he was adorable. Giving him a flower. And then he hears Lex Luthor's story, and he's like, it's okay, Lex. Bizarro, try. And I was like, oh my god, you're so sweet. And
but,
then
you know, that makes perfect sense, though, because he's a clone of Superman, right?
Yeah.
So he would have he would probably tend to act in ways that Superman does. I mean, he has a genetic disposition to
being a good
Smallville,
guy.
Right?
Yeah.
And so, but Lex is like a father figure to him, and Lex realizes after the whole incident with Otis that he can't, like, push Bizarro around because he doesn't respond to that, so he has to be nice to Bizarro. And I think that's part of the reason why Lex is in the place he is at the end of the comic, because of his interaction with Bizarro.
I feel like a huge turning point for Lex is when Bizarro gets killed.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, you see the panic on his face as he's yelling no, and he can't do anything. And you suddenly realize, you know, like it's culminated. All that interaction up to this point where, you know, he starts out by being a dick and just ordering him around and then kind of, like, working with him a bit more, and then he yells, but he was my monster, and it's so sad.
Yeah.
And because when he yells my monster, that just echoes all that Frankenstein stuff in my head, too. And just brings all of that back, and that whole
story. But see, it's like totally different from Frankenstein,
yeah.
Because in there, Frankenstein, you know, Dr. Frankenstein is ashamed of the monster. And I feel like, you know, this is, love is a strong word, but I feel like Lex, on some level, loves Bizarro like a child or a really good friend, you know,
like a dog, because he says "good boy" a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's like a child. I think he sees him as like his superpowered pet,
and that's okay. I think
that's about where his intelligence level is. And I mean, he's learning; he'll get there if he stays alive. But that's about where he's at.
And I think it's okay that's how Lex talks to him, because like Jen said, it really. Help. It really facilitates his growth as a character.
And so that's probably how Lex sees everybody intellectually anyway. I mean, when you're Lex Luthor, everybody else just kind of seems like a dog.
Well, see, that's cool, too, about the whole, how Lex beats Alex Luthor at the end is... He's like, you might be more powerful and stronger than me, but I'm smarter than you. And that's how he wins, right?
Yep.
And it was awesome. I thought the conclusion of this comic was really good.
And it ties it right around to the beginning, too, where he's talking about how, you know, survival of the fittest doesn't mean survival of the strongest. It means the person who can adapt to the situation the best. And he totally does, because he's got all of these plans in motion, but he whips them out half-cocked and makes them work for him.
Well, the plan originally was for Black Adam to transform him, but then that goes south. It doesn't work.
Even before like that immediate fight, like just pulling Bizarro out and you know getting his Iron Man armor, like all of those plans were plans that he had in motion, and other people would have gone, no, I can't do it. He's not finished. Bizarro's not finished. I can't do it. But Lex Luthor is willing to go with the flow and be like, fuck it. Let's take him out now. He's going to die anyway. We'll see what we get. And if we don't like it, then whatever. We're fucked anyway. Let's try it. You know? Like, he's willing to flow and adapt and change with the situation and rely on his intelligence. And that's why he wins from start to finish in this. Because he does it the whole damn time. I love it.
And what's cool about the the whole villain team that Luthor assembles is that they all bring something really valuable to the table.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and Luthor doesn't really boss them around. He lets them play their use their strengths effectively, and that's why he's a really good leader in this case.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he lets Leonard Snart or Captain Cold just be Captain Cold, and it works out really well. And you know, somebody's like talking down to Captain Cold, like he's like, "You just make a ice gun," and he's like, after he tells him that he can beat the Flash, and they don't believe him, and sure enough, he's the one who takes out Johnny Quick.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, Johnny Quick.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then, well, Captain Cold is great in this, too. I mean, not just that part. I mean, that part's great, but the whole time he's... And he gives one of my favorite lines, too, when he's talking to Manta, and Manta says something, like, really dark, and Captain Cold just, like, looks at him and says, "You're a real downer, you know that?"
What's funny, too, is Captain Cold tries to be Manta's buddy through the whole comic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at the end, he's like, "Man, I wish I could fly. Don't you, Manta?" And Manta's gone.
Yeah.
He pulls a Batman.
Well, I think Captain Cold's just like that. Like... Well, I think he's used to being the big guy with his rogues, like the leader.
Yeah.
And they're all buddy-buddy, and now he's with a crew that's not buddy-buddy at all, and he just wants to be buddy-buddy. Like, it's his go-to,
mm-hmm.
his go-to way of interacting. Which, by the way, I gotta say, I love the rogues so much, and this just does it even better for me, because they were given the order to level Coast City, and they're like, "Yeah, sure, we'll do that, but, you know, there's hospitals and children. We want to make sure people get out alive, you know?" Like, we don't want to be dicks.
Yeah.
We'll destroy the city because that's fun, but we don't want to be dicks, man. That's just fucked up. It's like they actually have, like, a weird moral line where they're okay, like, robbing people and harming people, but they don't want to kill anybody or beat up children. Or
Well, and that's why Flash and Captain Cold have a mutual respect, because Flash knows where the rogues will draw the line.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Flash respects them having a line, and like, respects that they see this as a profession in the game, and don't see it as just, like, being evil. Like, he respects their profession.
Yeah, because they're not, I don't think any of the rogues are evil in the same way that, like, the Crime Syndicate are evil, you know?
Oh, no.
They're mustache-twirly evil.
They're not even evil.
Not even, yeah. It's a hobby.
Or like like you said, Andy, it's their job, right?
Yeah.
Like, we read a Flash comic in which, like, the rogues and the Flash are sitting in a bar and just chatting, you know, at the end of the day. And you get this sense that for them it's, like, it's their job, it's how they make their income, but it's also just kind of like this fun pastime. Someone said that in an alternate universe, Captain Cold was a cop, and you can see that too. Like, he actually has a really strong moral sense for a quote-unquote villain. And that's why the term rogue is so much better for him. He's not a villain. He does bad things, but you get the sense it's more for, like, the thrill of it than the fact that he's committing a crime.
Have you guys read Flashpoint?
Yes.
No, not yet.
So in Flashpoint, Captain Cold is actually called Citizen Cold, and he's a superhero.
That's awesome!
Yeah.
He's Central City's superhero.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get the feeling that, like, in his head, Captain Cold sees himself as, like, Malcolm Reynolds.
He aims, like, to misbehave?
Like, yeah, like, that's, I think for these guys, it's, like, their self-image. They see themselves as, like, Han Solo and Malcolm Reynolds and... maybe a little bit of Captain Kirk. Like, that's what they see themselves as.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't see themselves as villains. Or they don't see... On the flip side, like, I think a lot of the villains see themselves as righteous or rulers or some grand thing. And these guys don't see themselves like that. They see, like, the image that they have isn't... There's no megalomania to what they're doing.
See, I think there's... So, I'm going to go off on a little tangent, but then I'm going to bring it back to the rogues real quick. I think the only villain in DC... who is righteous and his megalomania, like, is somewhat, what am I trying to say?
Rationalized?
It's rationalized, yeah, that's a good way to put it. Is Black Adam.
Yeah.
Because he,
He is a ruler.
He's like
Doom. By birthright, too.
He's like Doom, right?
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Doom. They're similar in that way. So back to the Rogues. I think the best single piece of media that captures the Rogues' relationship with the Flash is from Justice League, the Justice League cartoon.
Yes.
Where the Flash, I don't remember what he's doing, but he stops into a bar and Trickster's in there.
It's Flash, Orion, and Batman are looking for intel.
And Flash goes to get intel from Trickster, who's in this bar where the villains hang out. And after the conversation's done, it's like, okay, Trickster, go turn yourself in now. Okay? And he's like, okay, Flash, I'll go turn myself in. But he's like, go ahead and finish your drink first, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's awesome.
The conversation starts like, are you off your meds again, Jesse? Like, calls him by his first name. Like, obviously he knows exactly who he is. Mm-hmm. He's like, yeah, you know, I was feeling so good, and I didn't think I needed to take them anymore. He's like, you really need to be on your meds, bro. Yeah, I know. Okay. All right. Start tomorrow morning, okay? Because you're drinking tonight. All right. You got it, Flash.
Go turn yourself in.
Well, not even that. What happens is they have that conversation, and Flash gets up and walks away, and Batman and Orion don't move away from the door, and they're like, what are you doing? And Flash turns around and is like, oh, yeah, don't forget to turn yourself in, and gives him, like, the finger gun.
Yeah.
<He's> Oh, yeah.
I love that scene. I only remember that so because I showed it to my wife not too long ago. To be like, this is why you love Flash. This is why we're going to watch the Flash show on CW.
That's why you love, I mean, that car, the whole Justice League and Justice League Unlimited is amazing, but
yeah,
that's a conversation for another time.
Yeah.
So we've talked about Captain Cold and Lex. What do you guys think of the other people who make up Lex Luthor's Justice League?
What about like Manta? Yeah, what do you guys think of Manta?
Okay, go ahead, Jen.
I feel like this is the first time I've seen him. Who is he?
He is Aquaman's
arch-nemesis.
Arch-nemesis, yeah.
Okay.
So
which is why you don't know who he is.
Who he is he's a dude who, he's like a normal human, he doesn't have powers. All his powers are from either, like, the lasers are from part of his suit, and him, the rest of his stuff is just him being a grade-A badass. He's one of my favorite villains. I love Black Manta. My first experience with Black Manta was actually Super Friends, and back then I thought he was a complete fucking joke. But as
back
I've
then he
read,
was a complete fucking joke.
But now, as I've read like more Aquaman stuff, he's like the Rogues in some ways. Is that he's a bad guy, no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
But his sole purpose in life is to kill Aquaman, and he's only evil in that killing people or hurting innocent people is a means to an end, and the end is to kill Aquaman.
Yeah,
I mean, his whole purpose for joining up with Lex Luthor is because the CSA killed
Aquaman.
And so he's like, nuh-uh, that's not okay.
That's not what you do. That's what I do.
And he's just a dude who wants to kill Aquaman and loves being in the ocean. He has no powers. He's not like infused with Manta DNA or something. So one thing that I always thought was kind of interesting about Black Manta as a character is that, so he's wearing a black suit, and the, you know, so Black Manta, right? But it's actually a black guy under there.
Yeah.
So it always was kind of Black Lightning-ish to me.
Yeah. It's a little questionable.
But what I like about Black Manta is most of the time, for a long time, I had no idea. It, like, never occurred to me, like, what his skin looked like under the suit, because it's irrelevant, you know? It doesn't matter.
I really did like him, too. I like that he was just, like, such a downer.
Yeah, he was dark, but he wasn't dark in the, you know, New 52, I'm so gritty and unpleasant way. He was just, like, I don't know, it seemed ingrained in his personality and not a show, which I enjoyed.
What I really like about Black Manta, the New 52 iteration of him, is that it's the exact same character from pre-New 52.
You know who he reminds me of? And you won't get this reference if you haven't seen One Piece. He reminds me of Nico Robin. She's a character who will just, in the most deadpan straight voice, say the darkest thing. Like, they'll go, I don't know where hero protagonist is gone. And she'll just sit there, maybe he died.
Did you just make a reference to Snow Crash?
Why you gotta be like that? Yeah, a little bit. I mix Snow Crash and One Piece.
Okay. But have you read Snow Crash, Jen?
Oh, yes, many times.
Okay. We read it together.
Jen, oh, yeah.
Did?
Yeah, we read it for a sci-fi seminar.
Oh, I just read it because I
because you're a nerd.
Yeah.
I'm calling you a nerd. I took a class on it.
Well, no, I took the sci-fi and fantasy seminar at San Jose State, too, so.
You took that with Professor Stork, right?
Yep.
One of the ballers to ball.
We didn't read Snow Crash, but we read many other very cool stuff, things. I English good.
Oh, yeah. Make word happen right.
Mm-hmm.
So the only other thing that kind of bugged me about these comics was at the end. Did you guys get these? At the end of every issue, how there's like Calendar Man and his New 52 broadcast?
Yeah, I don't even read those.
I don't read those. They're in like a bunch of New 52 comics, right?
It's basically like him saying, hey, look at all the cool stuff happening in the tie-in comics. You should go buy those. And I'm like, no, I don't need to know what Bane is doing. I don't give a shit.
I don't know if it's any of these, but sometimes when I'm reading a New 52 comic, I'll flip past that and I'll be like, hey, Ambush Bug, turn the page.
Oh, Ambush Bug, okay. Whatever.
Yeah, Ambush Bug.
So what'd you guys think of the art?
I think it's great. I love the art in this. I think it's really cool.
I liked it. There were spreads where I was just kind of like, this is, again, two comics. Like, where they showed
the
all of...
Just, like, you could tell the whole point of the spread is for you to, as the reader, go, whoa!
Yeah. Even, like, they showed a clip of, like, mournfully all the heroes that were trapped. And
oh, yeah.
It was, like, just all these heads floating in space, and it... Like, I got the point where we're supposed to see who all was stuck in there, but it was just like, this is comics and not in my favorite way.
We got the gatefold.
Yes.
Which is kind of neat. But, yeah. You know, actually, I'm flipping through issue 3 right now, Jen, and I found that page that you're talking about where everybody's floating in, the gas is coming out of Firestorm's head.
Mm-hmm.
I actually hate it when there's spreads where I have to turn the book 90 yeah. degrees. You hate that so much.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even that big of a deal to turn it, right? But it just annoys the shit out of me. So, comic book publishers, don't fucking do that.
Well, I read it on digital, and I didn't know that that's even what they did.
Yeah, you have to turn it if you're reading issue 3. You read one page, normal style, right?
Yeah.
And then you turn the page to page 2, and you have to turn the comic 90 degrees. And I was like, God damn it.
It's such a burden.
Well, it's like, I have to turn it, and then I have to turn it back. The Green Lantern, oh God, the Geoff Johns Green Lantern comics do that so much, like every issue. And I'm like, come on, Jeff. Come on.
Oh, so before we get into Fight Night, I'm going to ask you guys. So Alexander Luthor used to be the good guy of 3. And I'm guessing there's some retcon thing about how he turned evil or something. But what do you think this comic means for the future of our Luthor in Earth 1? Because if Alexander Luthor, the parallel is evil, does that mean that we have the good Luthor?
Well, see, I think he... Okay, so he's evil from our perspective. But he refers to himself, I think, something like the greatest superhero of all time, or something to that effect. Because he kills the villains to take their powers.
Well, I think that's Megalo. He also bangs the villains to take their vaginas.
I don't necessarily believe that.
Well, okay. They at least have to have had sex, because he believes it's his baby. So they definitely banged.
All 3 of them believe it's their baby.
Yeah.
So she's... Okay. So not only is she a terrible female character... I don't know.
It's never made clear whose baby it is. Because she's like, oh, Owlman, it's your baby. And then she's like, oh, Clark, it's your baby. And he's like, no, it's Luther's baby.
It's alternate Aquaman's baby.
Yeah, it's probably Sea King's baby. It's going to have a lobster claw.
The crab baby.
Maybe
she's not pregnant. She just has crabs.
Oh, my God.
And she thinks it's Sea King.
Ew.
Jesus, that's disgusting. Yeah, I don't know. Like, this Luther, I really like that they're giving him that kind of high-level complexity. Because mm-hmm. you get around, and he ends up saying, no, Ted Cord, your father would not have wanted you to give this business to me. And, like, he clearly has changed. Like, not just a little bit. Like, at the beginning, he was willing to kill Ted's father and drive his family into ruin just to get the company. And now he's like, no, Ted, your father would have wanted it this way. And it might be just that he's seeing a better way. Like, he might just be seeing a better means to the ends that he wants. Like, this is mm-hmm. a better way to get what I want out of Ted Cord and out of Cord Industries. But it might also be that he's genuinely changed a bit. And it's like, why would you save Superman? Because in the beginning, you were blaming him for everything. Mm-hmm. And now you're saving his life?
Well, I think now he's in a position where... I think Lex Luthor is morally ambiguous. He's not... He does evil things, but he's not evil. I think he has an end goal, and he views a lot of things as being an acceptable means to that end. And he thinks that he has humanity's best interest at heart. Advancing humanity, whereas it would remain stagnant if it just let Superman take care of it. And I don't necessarily think he's right, but he certainly believes he is. Mm-hmm. And I think in his own moral scheme, he doesn't think he's doing bad things just to be bad. He thinks he's doing bad things for a greater good.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I will say I'm not super attached to New 52, but this does make me want to read more Luthor and see what's happened to him as a character, because he's always been an interesting character to me. And there was a run in Action Comics where he was the main character for a while, and that was a really good run. Like, he's a compelling character, not just a compelling villain, but a compelling character. And I'd be willing to read more of that.
I think he was pretty cool in Infinite Crisis too, back before.
Oh yeah, that's right.
When he was the leader. He was the leader of the Secret Society of Supervillains.
Yeah.
I can kind of give you a hint of what Luthor does after this, because I kept reading for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to know?
Sure.
So he joins the Justice League.
Oh, cool.
The for reals Justice League, like, and people are, and like, the team is kind of like, why are we letting, they're like, Batman and stuff's like, why are we letting this dude on the satellite? And other people are like, well, he kind of saved our asses, let's give him a chance kind of thing. And he really, like, he lets Batman know. He's like, I know who you are, Bruce. And he kind of hangs that over Batman's head a lot. Oh, and then he Luthor hires Captain Cold to be his head of security.
Yeah. Go and there's snart.
And then there's one part where Len calls up his rogues, and they're like, dude, you're a sellout. What are you working for Luthor now? And he's like, guys, I'm on the inside. We can pull off our biggest job ever.
Yeah.
And that's about awesome. That's about where I stopped reading. So I actually want to go back and pick these up. That's all in Justice League.
Okay. I might buy that digital. That'd be cool. I'd be down for some of that.
Like, I think Justice League in New 52, the Justice League comic, started off kind of rocky. I mean, the thing with the... So it opens with Darkseid. There's a whole Darkseid story in the beginning. And leading up to New 52, or leading up to Forever Evil, is kind of getting rough. But the stuff that happened after that I read, I thought was well done.
Which, oh yeah, we didn't even talk about that. The whole time, they were like running from this thing, and then you finally see the thing in the sky, and I'm like, are they running away from the Nexus? And at the very end, it turns out to be the Anti-Monitor. So it's just like this ribbon of energy in the sky, and I'm like, that's the Nexus, bro. Watch some
Captain
TNG.
Kirk's in there.
That's right. And Picard, depending on what time you're in there.
Yeah. So what do you think about the reveal with the Anti-Monitor at the end? What do you think of that?
I don't care. I mean,
when I first read it, I was like, "Oh shit, Anti-Monitor!" And then, like, I thought like something was gonna happen immediately afterwards, and nothing happened. At least as far as I read. So,
I mean, and that stuff's not interesting to me. Like, that's just if Anti-Monitor ends up coming over into Earth One, all that's gonna happen is Crisis on Infinite Earths, or no, Infinite Crisis, and somebody's gonna punch reality, and then more people are gonna get their heads punched out, and people are just gonna die, and it's gonna be typical DC casual violence. It's going to be the stuff that I don't like about DC Comics. When what I really like is what I read here, and that's fucking Lex Luthor and Len Snart. And
the I don't know necessarily. I mean, sure, they could do a whole rehash of Crisis on Infinite Earths. It's Crisis on Infinite Earths, by the way, Andy.
Okay.
That's what you're thinking of. But whoever Dark or Anti-Monitor is talking to, we don't see that person's off panel the whole time. He says that he's powering up to kill Darkseid.
Yeah, which is legit because Darkseid should be the big bad. But I just mean more like it's just going to be more casual, senseless violence. You know, like I don't see any interesting character building going on with the Anti-Monitor. You know, I just don't see that being what happens there.
I think Anti-Monitor pre-New 52 is pretty one-dimensional.
Yes.
But I don't necessarily. I mean, we only see him for one panel. I think you're.
I am prejudging. I totally am. I'm just explaining why I don't give a shit. Because as a character, like it's just. He's just like the monster that eats the universe. I'm like, whatever.
But in this, he's not like a giant Galactus-sized monster. He's like a dude.
See, but that's what gets me, is Galactus is also, like, Galactus, but he has a personality and he's interesting on the page, but for some reason Anti-Monitor never made that jump.
You know? I agree with you completely that Anti-Monitor never had any characterization, but
I'm not giving it a chance, that's my
stop problem. It, Andy.
I know what I'm doing wrong, I just can't help myself.
Okay.
Well, David, why don't you rate it?
It's hard to be unbiased, but I'm going to give this a 4 because I thought it was, you know, it's not the best comic ever, but I feel like this is a really well-done crossover. I think, so this is a good example of a crossover that's done well. So if you are one of our listeners out there are tired of crossovers because, you know, we get a lot of them from the
big
two. And you skipped this one because, and I don't blame you. It's like, oh, great, another crossover. Give this one a chance. It's good. I think it's a good example of a crossover done well. In the way that, like, Civil War was done well for Marvel way back when.
Right.
And it's not like Identity Crisis or Infinite Crisis.
Final Crisis.
Final Crisis.
Oh, God.
Anything Grant with Crisis Morrison. In the name that came after Crisis on Infinite Earths.
All right, Jen, what about you?
I'm going to give it a 3. I liked it. I liked Lex Luthor. I thought this was one of the better portrayals of him. He wasn't like a sniveling, nerdy, lame asshole. He was cool. He had morals. He turned into a better person. That was good. I like the characters. The story itself is all right. I guess my main complaint is some of it, as I keep saying, like, was a bit too comic-y and not the good way. Also, I don't know, like, some of the characters got a lot of really good, strong screen time, like Lex and Captain Cold, but I would have liked to see more of, like, Black Manta. I don't know, a 3.
I'm going to give this also a 3. I want to give it, like, 3.25, because I'm tied between 3 and 3.5.
So give it 3.25. I mean, this is our show. We can do whatever we want.
Yeah, fuck it. Yeah. 3.25. We're going to start breaking these down into quarter stars. Welcome to comics.
Pretty soon it's going to be like 9/16, so it's slippery slope of fractions.
I don't care. We can do it. just because, I mean, 2.5 is a totally average comic. 2.5 average, and that's the way I want to rate it. And that, this comic for me is definitely above average. Because so much of the time, what you're missing in a good comic is a complex villain. And when you take the time to write a story about villains like this and make your villains not just complex, but actually give them character and make them relatable, and show them to be as fully formed and rounded as the heroes that you're used to rooting for, when things go back to normal and these guys go back to villains again, this comic stays in your mind. You know, like, as bad as Final Crisis was, there was Countdown to Final Crisis, which had a storyline with Pied Piper and Trickster.
And when they become heroes?
Yeah. And it was,
yeah, that's great.
And one of them, like, it was good. And, like, I used to not give two shits about Pied Piper. But now, every time I see Pied Piper, I think of that story. And I think of how that story developed those characters. And I like Pied Piper now. Even though I couldn't have given a crap about him before. And I mean, a lot of the characters in this I already liked. So that's fine. But I just, it ties me to them even more. And I thought Bizarre, okay, yeah, whatever. It's opposite Superman. Okay, whatever. Just, it's dumb Superman. But now there's so much more about Bizarro. And now I like Bizarro. Now next time I see Bizarro, I'm going to genuinely be interested. And a comic like this enriches everything else. Which is why I want to bump the score up. But in and of itself,
bump that shit
in
up.
And of itself, I don't feel like it was a spectacular comic. I don't think it was good enough in its own right to earn a 3.5. But I think what it's going to do to everything else I read merits a 3.5. So 3.25, since I'm in between.
So what you're saying now is that Bizarro really am number one.
Yeah, Bizarro am number one. All right, let's get to it.
Fight Night, Round 1.
So for this week's Fight Night, we're going to do Best DC Villain Costume in the New 52. It doesn't have to be from this comic, but I think all of ours were in this comic a little bit.
Well, I mean, this is a good reference. There's so many of the villains in here.
Yeah. So David's going to go first, since he won last week.
Well, my first choice was going to be to go with White Rabbit. But we don't get that much of her in here, and she's really just Emma Frost with bunny ears, so I crossed her off the list.
My number one choice... Shit.
Damn it. So my choice actually is Black Manta. Because the reason I picked Black Manta is because at first glance his costume is super dorky, right? He's got like a black wetsuit with some fucking weird looking helmet on his head. But I think that the costume really works for him because he's such a badass that he can pull it off really well. And so I just think that his costume is very appropriate for him. There's nothing kind of weird about it. I mean, well, there's stuff weird about it, but it really, like, and it's very iconic. They didn't feel the need to change his costume between the reboot.
It hasn't changed since, like, Super Friends, or Super Buddy. Super Friends. Yeah, Super Friends.
And you know, we talk about, we as in comic book people, talk about icons and iconic costumes were like Power Girl's costume pre-New 52, right? That's pretty iconic.
Yeah, it is.
Or Wolverine's yellow costume. But Manta's is, you know, it hasn't changed, but I don't think people would call it iconic necessarily. But I think it's a really good, simple, straightforward, functional costume.
Oh, man. We got to start having a time limit, David.
I'm sorry. I can't help it.
It's all right. You're done. You're done. I'm cutting you off.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry.
Round 2.
I'm going to go next, and we'll save Jen for last.
Why don't you just, like, everybody else can talk as long as I did?
Because I don't have that much to say.
Okay.
My choice is Starro. And I put it in quotation marks, because we all know what Starro really is. He's a giant space starfish that has mind control and has baby starfish. And giant space starfish is not intimidating or scary at all, but you know what is a starfish clung onto somebody's face. Because there's a visceral reaction to that, because you go, oh god, I can now imagine starfish on my face, and it's just weird and disgusting. And so, Starro in this is just a dude in like a turtleneck sweater with a sport coat on, but then a fucking starfish on his face.
business casual Starro.
Exactly. But you know what that does? That just makes it that much more relatable, because I have a coworker who dresses in turtlenecks and sport coats. And now, next time I see that guy, I'm going to imagine a fucking starfish on his face, and he's going to be mind-controlled evil. And it's just, it's ridiculous, but visceral and relatable all at the same time in a way that's fun and scary, which is a great balance for a villain.
Round 3.
So I chose Mad Hatter, and this is with the caveat that I have not read too much Batman in New 52, so this is drawing pretty exclusively from this comic. And it's that normally Mad Hatter is drawn with the fucking proportions of MODOK, which makes him not scary in any way. Except, here, he's drawn like a creepy dude in a really outdated costume. And I think this brings, like, the correct vibe of what Arkham and its inmates should be. Instead of being, like, goofy and just weird, there's kind of a strange, I almost want to say freak show quality about them, drawing from, like, American Horror Story right there. And it adds a creepiness and grittiness to Arkham and Gotham as a whole to have those villains not be fucking goofy looking.
Let's get some votes. David.
Oh, man, you made me vote last time first. Okay. You know, I like what you said, Andy, about Starro, and I kind of gave you that whole business casual line, but I gotta vote for Jen again, because this, especially in the gatefold, where Mad Hatter's, like, in the crowd, he's pretty fucking terrifying. And he's, and he's, like, really creepy and terrifying looking. He's got this weird look on his face, and then he's sipping tea out of a pink cup. So I'm going to give my vote to Jen. Sorry, Andy.
It's all right. I'll go next. I'm going to give my vote to David. Because everything you said a lot. I got to stop rewarding you for...
for talking a
lot. For talking too damn much.
Because pretty soon that will just be my strategy.
I got to stop doing that shit.
Because anyway, I figure what happens if I keep talking, you'll just give me a vote to shut up.
Black Manta, because he taps a little bit of Darth Vader in my heart, I think. Because he's just, you don't know what's in there. You don't know. It's scary. All right, Jen?
So I'm going to ruin this and make it a tie because I vote for Andy on this. After what you said about Starro and pointed out that he is in, like, business casual, like, that is creepy. That is actually terrifying. So, yeah, that's a good one.
Feels good to get voted for, even though we're all tying. So, in the event of a tie, we all get a point.
Yay!
Yay! Right. David's winning still.
Yeah, technically. All right, let's get the scores.
David, 2. Jen, 1. Andy, 1.
All right, that's it for this week. Next week, we're keeping up our Best of 2014 trade paperbacks with The Wicked and the Divine, written by Kyron Gillen.
Yeah.
All right.
That's what I was going to pronounce it.
All right, Kyron Gillen. That's next week. Wicked and Divine. Till then, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
I have a drop for the scores.
Bass drop.
Production value.
Drop the bass.
This is what we can do with $5 an episode. Thank you, Raymond. Can name up the fuck out of this guy.
He deserves it.
He does.
We love you.